Okay, one more time on this. This is 1411. It's a 1 7/8. It's on a 3-inch reel. Heads out, plastic reel being played back on the Sony 4-track.
Well, there's usually here every day going in and bumping out in the dense environment. And they perverted their mind and turned away their eyes from looking to heaven, remembering what was the righteous judgment. Both of these were inflamed with passion for her, did not tell each other of their distress, for they were ashamed and disposed of lustful desire to possess her. They watched eagerly, day after day, to see her. They said to each other, let us go home and immediately find her. When they went out, they parted from each other, but turning back, they met again. And each pressed the other to reason, they confessed their love. And then together they arranged for a time so they could find her alone. Once while they were watching for an opportune moment, Susanna went in as before with only two maids, and went to bathe in the garden with the very one. No one was there except the two elders who had hid themselves and watched. Susanna said to her maid, bring me oil and ointment and shut the garden door so that I may bathe. They did as she said, shut the garden door, and went out by the side door to bring what they had been commanded. I did not see the elders, but these were distant. And when the maids had gone out, the two elders rose and ran to Susanna and said, look, the garden doors are shut, no one sees us, and we are in love with you. So give your consent and buy with us. If you refuse to testify against you, the young man was with you. This was why he sent your name away. Susanna sighed deeply and said, I am hemmed in on every side, for if I do this thing, it is death to me, and if I do it not, I shall not escape your hand. I choose not to do it, rather than not to fall into your hand, rather than to stand in the sight of God. Then Susanna cried out with a loud voice and fell to shout again. One of them ran and opened the garden door. When the household servants heard the shouting in the garden, they rushed into the side door to see what happened. When the elders told their tale, the servants were greatly ashamed. Nothing like this had ever been said before about the family. The next day, when the people were gathered to the house of her husband, Eliakim, these two elders came, full of their wicked thoughts, to have Susanna put to death. The elders were to say, after crying. They said before the people, set it for Susanna, the daughter of Hilkiah, who was the wife of Eliakim. They sent for her. She came to her parents, her children, and her family. Now Susanna was a woman of great refinement and beautiful in appearance. As she was veiled, the wicked men ordered her to be unveiled so they might see their eyes would feast upon her beauty. Her family and friends and all who saw her strength wept. Then the two elders stood up in the midst of the people and laid their hands upon her head. She weeping looked up towards heaven with a heart troubled to the Lord. The elders said, we were walking in the garden alone. This woman came in with the maid, shut the garden door, and stood at the maid. Then a young man who had been hidden came to her and lay with her. We were in a cordon in the garden, and we saw this wickedness ran into them. We saw them embracing, and we could not hold the man, for he was too strong for us. They opened the door and dashed out. So we seized this woman and asked her who the young man was. She would not tell us. These are the things which testify. The assembly believed them, because they were elders of the people, because they were judges, and condemned Susanna to death. Then Susanna cried out with a loud voice, that, O eternal God, who has discerned what is secret, who art aware of all things before they come to be. Thou knowest that these men have borne false witness against me, and now I am to die. I have done none of these things wickedly to them against me. The Lord heard her cry. As she was being led away to be put to death, God aroused the Holy Spirit of a young lad named Daniel. He cried with a loud voice, I am innocent of the blood of this woman. All the people turned to him and said, what is this that you have said? So taking his stand in the midst of them, Daniel said, are you such a fool as the sons of Israel? Have you condemned the daughter of Israel without examination and without learning the facts? Return to the place of judgment. These men have borne false witness against you. And all the people returned in haste. The elders said to him, Come, sit among us and warm us, for God has given you that right. Daniel said to them, Separate those who are over there far from each other. Let me examine them. When they were separated from each other, Daniel summoned one of them and said to him, You old relic, your sins have now come home, which you have committed in the past, pronouncing unjust judgment against the innocent, letting guilty go free. Now then, you really saw her, tell me this. Under what tree did you see them being intimate with each other? He answered, Under a mastic tree. Daniel said, Very well, you have lied against your own head, for the angel of God is indeed descended to God, whom you will have your own head cut off. And he sent him aside, and he commanded the congregation to bring the other man. Daniel said to him, You offspring of Canaan and not of Judah, beauty has deceived you, and lust has perverted your heart. This is how you have been dealing with the daughters of Israel, and they were intimate with you through fear. The daughter of Judah would not interfere with your wickedness. Now then, tell me, under what tree did you catch them being intimate with each other? He answered, Under an evergreen oak. Daniel said to him, Very well, you also have lied against your own head. The angel of God is waiting with his sword, calling you both in two, that you may destroy you both. And then all the glory, and were led out, killed because in ancient Israel, the man testified falsely, and he caught in his falsehood. He was convicted of a very crime, which he was trying to have another man. Daniel is the folk hero. Daniel is the man of all parts. I blush to have his name. About Daniel, it's one of the great mystery stories of ancient times. Nebuchadnezzar was the great king, and Daniel was one of his ministers. There was a great god in Babylon by the name of Bel, B-E-L. The great temple of Bel is listed in the city of Israel. The priests there were proud of the idol of Bel, and they were proud of Bel's power. They had it rooted about. Bel had an appetite set for food. Oh God. Fruit. People would bring their sacrifices and their food offerings all day long. And then very visibly, all the priests would exit from the compound of the temple. They'd close all the doors, they'd lock the doors, seal them. Next morning, when anybody came in, lo and behold, the temple was there, including the priests. So Nebuchadnezzar, being an impressionable king and believing many gods, believed that this was the truth, that Bel was the greatest of all gods, sent out an order to all of the statecraft and governors and so on and so on and so on, that all who came, and this is must bow to Bel, it's Daniel. The king, in anger, ordered Daniel to be killed. Daniel, in his virtue, he said, Oh, wait a minute. I'll prove to you why I don't bow down to God. The king said, You can't prove to me. I've seen it. Night after night, the priests leave the compound. The doors are sealed. They're locked. Nobody comes in at night. Up. Next morning, when we open the doors, Bel has dissolved all the Okay. Let's do that. Let's check. So that day, Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel go to the temple of Bel, and they watch the people bringing the food, and surely all the tables in the temple are filled and overflowing. And they have all the priests leave the temple, only Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar remain, and Nebuchadnezzar finally says, Who are you satisfied? Daniel says, I'm satisfied. They lock the doors, they seal the doors, and two sentries are placed in every door, and there's no trickery there. The next morning, bright and early, Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel appeared before the gates of the temple, opening the doors and throwing open the door. The tables are empty. Bel is in all the field. Off of the king looked down at him. They looked down and see. There was a track of the priests of Bel, the track of the door, to the table. Back again. Tonight they return to the temple of the tunnel. Daniel that day had sprinkled scissors all over the marble floor of the temple. So we had kind of to the 6th century before the common era. One of the great early James Bond of all time. I try to tell you these stories because it's been a bit of bomb attack. Because this is the way it was told. This is not great spiritual literature. This is a literature which a desperate seeking need inspire. This is the literature which is literature of a folk, of a child, the soldier alone with campfire. The heroism of Daniel, which is appealing and his state which is important. But note one element in the biography of Daniel. Daniel is not only a steadfast, clever young man, but in the first story, which I haven't told you, the story very much like all of these, Daniel is called one, a young man who is knowledgeable in the learning of the tongue of the Chaldeans. In another verse, he's called a young man who has understanding in all things. Daniel is something of a young chosen. Daniel is something of a very unique kind of person. Today we will find a man of it all, kind of place, who was found very often, all and everywhere in the ancient world, has the power to interpret and predict. Greek went to the oracle of Delphi. Syrian went to the oracle of Osiris. The oracle of Necromancy, wherever you went, you can hear it. Daniel is recommended to us in one skilled 10 times better than all the magicians, all the astrologers, for all the realms he has ascended. Now, strangely, we should find a biblical hero who is meeting to speak of Adam. Because the Bible, or the rest of the Bible, works with the devil, sorcery, necromancy, soothsaying, conjuring, and the like. The book of Exodus is the law. Thou shalt not suffer a false witness. King Saul, you remember, was killed because in Scripture, my visiting the witch of Endor, find out what would be the result of his battle. In the book of Deuteronomy, we have the largest, most complete denunciation of this kind of practice. I'll read it to you very briefly. When thou art come into the land the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abomination of these nations. Thou shalt not be found among you any that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, nor anyone that uses divination, or a soothsayer, or an enchanter, or a sorcerer, or a charmer, or one that consults a ghost, or one that consults a familiar spirit, or a necromancer. Whosoever doeth these things is an abomination unto the Lord. Because of these abominations, the Lord thy God will drive thee out of them before thee. Thou shalt be wholehearted to the Lord thy God. These nations that thou art dispossessed hearken unto the soothsayers and the diviners. As for thee, the Lord thy God has not suffered chosen food. Israel was the one nation in antiquity broke with black arts, tyrant. Yet here we have Daniel, Colchio, revealing that all the rabbis preached about the people didn't actually exist. I can testify to that today. Talk about many things that would be the rightness of their deep and the action where they casually spent time in life. So it was in those days. Daniel has qualities which the people revered, feared, the ability to interpret, the ability to understand the blacker side, the curious side of life. This won him great victory. Now, this element in the story of Daniel is important because it leads us from the Daniel of the first 6 chapters of this book with the folk hero, the man whose faith never breaks, the man who saved, to the Daniel of the last chapter of this book, who is the man who predicts exactly the end coming judgment, the final nation. And on the basis of the early in the deal that the apocalypse, the element that was built up at the beginning, is put into the bow deck. To show you the transition, let's read chapter 2 and parts of it. First, I'm going to draw a picture. If any of you know me will know I'm a very poor drawer. We put in the art show. This is an idol. That is a goal. The chest and the arm are of silver. The sides are of brass. One leg is of iron. The other is of clay. Now imagine such an idol. You often feel wonder if you do why it is that you say that idols are sometimes quite beauty in creation. But this is the idol of which Daniel will speak. He will make a prediction on the basis of these idols. Very strange. Let's see what he will say. Somebody's going to come along and take a rock, super deck and smash it. Bring it to the idol. The idol will crumble. This rock is broken. That's possible. Let's see how it goes again. Chapter 2 is a great long preamble which need not concern us about how Daniel appears back to the king as his dream. The king refuses even to tell the dream. One will interpret it as to get the dream and also make the interpretation. Daniel comes in about verse 31. Here's what the king saw in the interpretation. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. His image which was mighty, and his brightness was surpassing. Stood before thee, and the appearance thereof was terrible. I agree. As for that image, its head was of fine gold, its breast and its arms of silver, its belly and its sides of brass, its legs of iron, its feet part of iron, and type of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was put out without hands, both the images on its feet and were in iron and clay, broke them in pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken in pieces together. It became like a chaff of summer threshing floor. The wind carried them away, so that no place was found for them. The stone that smote the image came in great moment. You hear it. This is the three. Now we will tell thee the interpretation thereof. Thou, O King, King of Kings, if unto the God of Heaven hath given the kingdom, the power, the strength, and the glory, wheresoever the children of men, the beasts, the seal, and the fowls of heaven dwell, hath be given them into thy hand, and hath made thee rule over them, thou art the head of gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to the third kingdom of brass, shall bear rule over all the earth. The fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks its pieces and beateth down all things. As iron that crushes all thee, till it break and depression. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, shall be a divided kingdom. There shall be in it of the firmness of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, the part of the kingdom shall be strong and part thereof great. Whereas thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves by the feet of men. They shall not flee one with another. Even iron doth not single the clay. In those days of those kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Shall the kingdom be left to another kingdom? Shall break in pieces and consume all the kingdoms, but it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest the stone was cut out of the mountains without hands, broken pieces, iron, brass, and clay, the silver, and the gold, great God hath made known to the king, but shall come to pass hereafter. The dream is certain, the interpretation thereof is sure. I can believe that the interpretation thereof is sure. You're a better reader who expects than I am. What we have essentially is a dream projected back into history, obviously, which Nebuchadnezzar has made the great golden head, being followed by another kingdom, less golden and silver, probably the Persian kingdom, to be followed by another kingdom, the kingdom of Alexander, less golden, made of brass. This kingdom will be divided between the Egyptians, the Syrians, and the Greeks. It shall be intermingled, they'll be intermarried between the royal families. And ultimately, there is going to come the stone cut out by hand. You cannot imagine that this be just a baby. Will change by God's hand now will destroy what remains, beginning with the leg of the great kingdom of heaven. No one will begin to throw himself in the kingdom of the Spirit. What are the exact kingdoms represented? Yes. Surely some such symbols are those of the apocalypse. It is a symbol from all the apocalypse. Daniel, the reason why I chose it. But it's difficult at the kind of literature that you have to do. All depends on your starting point, what you read back into the text. We have apocalypse in many areas. We have it in nursery rhymes, house of dancing. We have it in our Haggadah. Came the butcher that killed the ox, the French for fire, and the each of those animals represents another kingdom, it's only stored in Israel. The climax came, the Holy One, blessed be He. God ultimately, at the end of time, all of these apocalypses come along and redeem this. Now, it's futile for us to go any deeper into apocalypse or its history. Men have spent their lives on it. Some of the stuff is that slippery literature. You can read into it pretty much what you will. What I'd like to suggest to you is simply this. There are a number of elements in the book of Daniel which became basic and medieval religion. And the book of Daniel is the only thing in the Bible which defines things. And they're important for any to understand this. First is angelology. The idea that there are actually guardian angels, great presences fluttering about in heaven. Gabriel, Daniel, Amiel, Michael. Angels who are avenging angels, or the patron angels of nations, guardian angels of people. We have in the angels two things. First of all, an explanation of how the holy God, holy other, can speak in and to man and relate himself. Hebrew word malach, angel, is also the Hebrew word messenger. These angels provide the means of communication present and here in heaven. This and the Holy Spirit, which role the Holy Spirit plays in God. You have also in these angels a reintroduction of paganism, Judaism, and Christianity. Each nation has its own speaks of angels. My God and my faith in angels is faith instead of the church on obviously. That we have the God fighting with many brothers, even as they do with this, even as they did with the oil. To destroy the angelology, one of the great benefits of the monarchy. You have in the book of Daniel the only reference to physical resurrection. The Bible, as you've heard, I'm sure, contains very little on the question what happens to me after I die. In most of the Bible, there is something called Sheol. Sheol is a place of shadow. Not a certain place. Man goes down to Sheol when he dies. Now Sheol is not Hades, although there is something of Hades in it. There is no river in Sheol that circulates always. There is no piercing jaw that begins. There is no eternal tunnel. Man is put into the place. So somehow Sheol is not defined in the book. There is not in the Bible the doctrine of immortality of the soul, although the body may not survive, the spirit somehow does. The concept of immortality the soul requires the Greek thought, body and soul, flesh and spirit, were two separate and significant elements of the Jewish faith, which I heard from. Man with God will die, with God. How? Still come. Though I move to Kiev, I will not die but live. What is it mean? The Bible brings us. So, in the last chapter of Daniel, you get an entirely new and dramatic concept. Verse 2. Many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to reproaches, everlasting scorn. They that are wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament. They that turn the many to righteousness as the stars ever and ever. That's all. Those are the only two somewhat enigmatic lines the Bible would speak of resurrection. They suggest what we have come to know heaven and hell, but it's not explicit. But certainly there is the belief here of a reawakening, some world beyond the grave. And as you well know, from Daniel's time down almost to our own, the Jew prayed resurrection of the dead. The pious Jew believed in some form of the resurrection. They might philosophize it away, might think of it as a purely spiritual term. He never went so far as to assume that he could draw the punishment and draw out the promises that God had laid out for the wicked and for the righteous. Dante does not appear in the He did believe. The Imam Ben Menashe believed in faith, yet believed in resurrection. That's the only truth of the when modern Judaism began to undo the piety, he said, look at the balance. 1,000 years of biblical literature speaks not one bit of resurrection. Two vague sentences, the last book of the Bible, and the most unique book of the Bible, the one book of the Bible is apocalyptic, had no moral lessons to it, which is not essentially Jewish. So we did away. There's rather spooky, very something. Medieval religion believed in the foolishness. There's also a word in the book of Daniel which is very important. The word son of man. You know this came from the tragedy. It means apparently only human beings. We can see John, and because of the view we did see, apocalyptic literature, because he is John as one of the terms, the proof term. Why is Daniel in the Bible? Run counter to almost every one of our usual norms for wisdom. And I confess that I don't have the answer. I suspect that had Daniel not been written so close to the time in which the Bible was finally written, it would not have been answered. In the first place, all the other literature which was apocalyptic, and there was a good deal of it among Jewish texts today, was putting the apocryphal into the hidden. But Daniel apparently had won a special place for himself during the Maccabean Revolt. When the Bible was edited within 50 years of the Maccabean Revolt, the book was close. The time still away where the book would get somehow. So it's here. So it misled thousands of generations. But I wonder, sometimes the secret is 200 years now, biblical, modern men, a damn biblical, do the folklore, church goes. Yet suddenly we find ourselves times not unlike the Maccabean times. But they seem to be inspired by it. It seems to be the lion's den. But we're not quite sure how it's all going to come out. And the book of Daniel is an excellent reminder, I think, that in frightening times men turn to excessive piety. They lose that sense of balance almost inevitably, leave the beast keeping. And begin to build up folk heroes at the great danger of the demigod leaving. They take religion and they turn it from the demand for a certain kind of holiness, a deep religious life. Religion becomes now a deep of saving oneself from the inevitable tragedy. Life. You read some of the leading Christian thinkers today, Germanic, but you find in him very weak yet. I despair of the notion God will somehow save me. My proof of my love of God is not by going into the world, making a family, and raising my children, my proof is somehow withdrawing. Turning away into myself and God welcomes me. I wonder too if our young people, with all their passionate protest, are not in a sense that the same mood of extravagance is also inevitably present of men who sensible, reasonable time as we can manage this. Time of death, the enemy says, the sentence of the death. Now your question. Death. No. The question was, does the book of Daniel relate to the sensual in the last week? The answer is no. Daniel relates to a faith that believes that all things in the sense of turning, world history coming to an end, we give up. Existentialism, for the most part, is using the feeling of the calendar, the statistical element. Right here. I know, I'm just, the apocryphal book, apocryphal is a Greek word. It means things which were hidden. These books weren't actually hidden. These were books that were written between, let's say, the second century before the Common Era, first century after the Common Era. When the Jews determined what was included in the Bible canon and what was not included, the books which were not included were hidden, because they said they were accepted. That's why most of the apocalyptic books, the books of all are in here. There were other reasons why certain things were hidden. The story of the Maccabees does not appear in the Bible. There are four books of the Maccabees in the Apocalypse, and they were deliberately taken. Because right after 168, 165, the Maccabees, the Hasmoneans, and the Maccabees established a rule. Independence. Israel was independent kingdom for about 100 years. And then the Romans came. Now during that 100 years, the 25th of Kislev, our Hanukkah, was observed as the 4th of July. It was a great festivity of independence. When the Romans conquered Palestine, what happened to the 4th of July? What would happen to the 4th of July, for instance, if we were to lose the Cold War? 4th of July, I'm sure, would be the time when all of our young contacts would get together and they'd plan for a bombing raid on the governor of Cleveland's house or on the commissar's palace or something like that. And the wiser head of Israel said, now look, little Judea, 100 square miles of moat, can't fight Rome. You can't go on rehearsing the great history of the Valley Forge in 1776. It builds up false hopes. So they took these books and they hid them for a while. They weren't quite successful. They took Hanukkah. which was originally just a festival of liberation, and it made into a religious festival at the time. They invented a story, you know, that brings you light, and that's supposed to be burnt during day. It never did, and it never was, and nobody was ever deluded about the fact that it was a miracle that actually happened. It invented 100 years after the event in order to give a religious interpretation to a political victory and to twist it from the plea, you know, go out and get to be history, and hopefully understand the frequency that both you're a champion, believe in God, in your way. And the men who tried to hide these books were very correct. Between 1670, the common era, did Israel Judea revolt? No. And they fought bravely. And about 300,000 Jews believed to walk in. At the end of this revolt, they rolled in the sea coast to Jerusalem. They visited the crucifix, the Roman crucifix, every city along the way on both sides of the world. The masters of Jesus. Then the Jews weren't satisfied. We were the awfully plantation in those days. And in 105, the Cyprus, Cyrene, and the Greece were going. Over 100,000 Jews were slaughtered. And in 135, the Jews in Egypt were going. There were 150,000. Of them. If you want to understand why Christianity took over the world and not Judaism, I've often felt that here's part of the answer. 50 years, because of our proof argument, we managed to kill off about 50% of our effective male population. We never had a chance. So that what they were trying to do was why? Because it was impenetrable. Isn't that what I'm saying? I went a long way about saying these are both Christian, Hebrew, Aramaic, Orthodox, and Judaism. It's either not deemed to be first order, deemed to have logical doctrine, or deemed to have a reason to believe. They're all available. The seventh page, the author translation is English. There are a number of translations which are good. And the institution for a bigger, they only have a copy of it. There's what they call the Pseudepigrapher. And the Pseudepigrapher is a second collection of books in 1999, which were not used by the Russian. And do it over all the time. This. The question, you phrase the question inaccurately. Why didn't you learn the 11th concept in your confirmation list? Question is, and I must say it with this question, I had to have another dinner tonight. The question is, are there other characters who are essentially not unlike James, who are written about in the past? The answer is, there are and there are. There are a number of men who are written about in the Sectarian literature of Jesus. The most famous of those, James speaking, so-called teacher of righteousness, with the binding of the head of the Christian. This was a man who, like Jesus, believed the end of the country. This was a man who, like Jesus, counted the people who lost the desert to get ready for the end. This was a man who, like Jesus, preached with community, that communism was proper in the lack of concern for avoiding immediate communal end. This was a man who believed in strict segregation of men and women in that life. This was a man who rather emphasized that was against the law by one thing. And this was a man who apparently died as a martyr of his faith. These were both in parallel with the past. We have also a number of people who were ethnic, there are a few shy, who were also religious leaders at the time, prophesied or preached. Both of parallel to Jesus, John the Baptist, who was baptized her, and he became a Muslim. You must understand what happened. A great Eastern civilization, though it had been called by many names, had ruled the areas for thousands of years. They were called Persia, or Babylon, or Assyria. It matters little. It was eventually a very considerable thing, and one which is really good news. Very accepted by that. When Rome came on the scene, Rome was seen to be as something entirely different. Rome was partial, no king. Rome was the tyrant. Rome had no dispute with humanity. Rome came out of the West, not out of the East, out of the primitive land, not out of the civilized. Rome was aggressive and belligerent militarily, and rather doctrinal. Orthodox in terms of the primitive Spartan kind of culture. And in country after country of the ancient world, men arose who said, our world is ending. This is the ultimate chance. There is no hope. We have no chance except if our God somehow miraculously gives us the peace to us. And there was an ancient tradition which was not only Jewish, but pagan. And when the world was created, there would be five periods of 1,000 years, each one less hopeful, less civilized and wasteful. At the end of the sixth 1,000-year period, there would be the wars of Gog and Magog, confusion and desolation and destruction, fire and brimstone, if not a fire. Then there would be the salvation. And almost all of these prophets, whether they be Jewish, Arabian, Zoroastrian, or Egyptian, whatever they were, played around with the same sense of the end of the fifth period. Golden period, silver period, the bronze period, the iron period, and plate. These all been lived through. Now we were at the final moment, the final time. So yes, you do find in this literature reference this kind of righteous priest living sinners. You find reference to John the Baptist in Jewish literature. You find reference to a number of prophets that appear in recent and Roman traditions historical rules were not unlike. Yes, sir. Two questions to both of you. The first question is, does not the prophet Ezekiel speak like a new director? References to Valiant Bible, so that sermon, which validates the anachronism, seems to come to life. Now, this is not the time of the resurrection as this gathering suggests. This is one miracle at its moment through power of God. It's a miracle, not an endless sign of the world. It is of the same complexity. It does not read effectively yet. The second question, as I remind you, is what is Daniel of the time of the second Isaiah? Now, the question here is, was Daniel written in the Maccabean time? Or at least compiled there? Or was he compiled during the Babylon exile, which was 586, 586 before Jesus? There is in the book of Daniel, in the book of Isaiah, the teaching of the original Isaiah, probably the first book of Babylon. Then there are teachings of a number of the prophets. One of them is called Ezekiel Isaiah, the second Isaiah. We don't know him by name. We know that he is not the first, because he's the first of the next long after the fact. We know that he did bring Babylon to Israel. The question you're asking me is, was this Daniel of the period of the exile? The answer I must give you is no, was not. Daniel, the legendary historical Daniel was, but the book of Daniel is not. This kind of apocalypse shows us, because in the apocalypse makes Nebuchadnezzar the first of the kings. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of the Gentiles. He could not work this progression of five great kingdoms into with that historical period. We know, for instance, that after Nebuchadnezzar, there was Belshazzar. I said, well, Belshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar, and then at the end of the house, Babylonian house, and then the first king of Israel. We know there was one great king, and that's it. So it does exist historically. However, there's one way in which you're going to stand that. The last chapter is Isaiah, chapter 58, 63, were not written by the first Isaiah or the second Isaiah, but by a third Isaiah. And the third Isaiah, we believe now, was the period of the Maccabees. If you ask me that question, the answer is yes. Thank you. Yes. Well, this is a question so much as a comment about the fight that we must have had and what went into the Bible and what didn't. The answer is that we must have had terrible fights about what went into the Bible. There was the good Jews who didn't have it. We know the reason that some of the reason they fought about it. Esther doesn't have the first God of all. God's not the village. The Song of Songs is good poetry, good love poetry, which actually is perfectly defined as really fully expected to be called the Bible. Daniel, of course, is completely different thing. They had fights about other things, Proverbs. By the time they put Proverbs into the Bible, there's a far better selection of the Bible. And why did they put in Proverbs? Proverbs for no better reason than the associated name of the time. Book of Exodus, 15, 12. My name is psychoanalysis. Why did I choose the book of Daniel as my closing one? Well, for one reason, when I was doing this, I wanted to reread Daniel. As you know, if you've been listening to people in the last, an element of pessimism has been present in my life. And I have become more and more urged by the apocalypse. And I suppose I wanted to remind myself when I did it, that there was no particular perfect sin that does lead you to destruction. I thought it was worth doing with you. Because I wanted to make you know and realize, which is part two, that not all the Bible. This isn't a book that you can read in a different shot. The last year I closed by reading to you something called the Story of Production. I closed by reading to you something back in the book. This is where the story is written. Because until we realize the Bible has all the limitations, all the things, all the greatness of Jesus, nothing new. You know the Jews surrounded at all times, which is frank. Today, either the Bible is too true or emphasized on anything. You get on your doorstep literature with food, the attendant goes to hand, and the Jews are about to get the greatest. You look closely, you always think, I have to, in a sense, destroy your belief in the Bible to preserve your belief in the Bible. That comes from the Bible. The question is, who formed these beliefs in mortality? by so many questions about reform, truth, and events, and we're supposed to scratch at one of us with our shading and flipping fingers. One of the things reform produces is that there are certain questions that cannot be answered. Nobody has ever gone and back. They're not too worried about right here, but it's not worried about anything else.
One of them, let me ask you something. You know enough now about how Jesus presence is put together.
You realize that whatever Jesus may have been given to Jesus, you can see how his story of his son become what it's known as today. One of the ways in which this was done was to put him into situations which would be exactly like situations spoken of in the Bible, so that you could then ascribe to him what the Bible did. Someday I think that lecture, today I can see what happened. Now, I know you're exhausted, but I am. It's been fun. I hope that next year, another year, we'll do this again. Dorothy wants to come up to make the thank you, which I have far from the company for all that pick up the psalm and forgive us and God forgive us. Read your Bible, worry about it, puzzle about it, bring your questions, and that day.